Hey, this is John Lee Dumas of the award-winning podcast, Entrepreneurs on Fire, and you're listening to the Excelsior Journeys with George Soroy. Prepare to ignite.
So would you say that that's kind of like the lightning bolt moment for
you? And that's
why
I taught myself how to draw, was actually the Little Mermaid, drawing stills of Ariel.
I've got better things to do tonight than die.
Sylvester jumped out of his chair and said, who the F is this?
I remember walking out of the theater with him saying, I'm going to write Halloween.
I'm rather impressed with your research. Rarely do people ask me about Children in the Corn.
It doesn't have to be perfect. Just do it. You know, throw some spaghetti against a wall. See if it sticks.
This is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward. Welcome back to Excelsior Journeys, the road to creativity. This is George Soroy, and thank you so much for being here. Before I introduce our guest for this week, I want to take you back to a time when I was writing and drawing with absolute abandon, filling steno notebooks and pads that my grandparents had for me whenever we would visit, from the time when I was in fourth grade at 9 years old. I kept on picking at those, just wanting to make something happen with them. Eventually, I started a little comic book about them, and then I moved into writing short stories about them, even one that wound up being the length of a novel. It was an absolute joy to be doing that. I just kept on going, and it did not matter if I did what I would eventually refer to as reverse fan fiction, because fan fiction is usually taking established characters and dropping them into new situations. I was taking new characters and dropping them into very familiar situations. I was ripping off every single thing that I saw, that I heard, and just putting them all into a mishmash and then getting it onto the page. And it was so much fun to do it. Now, 40 years later, I am trying my best to actually make something of it as an author. Got picked up by a publisher. They're going to be releasing my novels based on a lot of those characters. But at the same time, I have a full-time job, a family, a mortgage, debts, bills, responsibilities, and other creative outlets, especially podcasting and audiobook narrating. But I also have all of those wonderful things that come with being a creative these days: anxiety, depression, self-doubt, fatigue, imposter syndrome, perfectionism, all that stuff just gumming up the works. It's very difficult for me to find that same sort of joy I had back then. And when I heard about Susan Hensley, who is a transformational coach, a speaker, and an author, and her method of getting everything going again to kind of bring you back to those days when you were writing and drawing with absolute abandon, and getting that sort of flow back, getting the joy back. Also knowing about her book that has recently come out, Art for Your Sanity, How Art Journaling Can Help You Manage Chaos and Unleash Joy. This was somebody that I definitely had to have on this show, someone who I knew that I could learn from. And I know there are many of you out there feeling the same way, how it used to be so easy to get these ideas out, to get these stories out, to get these characters done. But now things are different, and it's very difficult for us to kind of get back to those moments that we had before. And so having Susan out here doing the Lord's work and trying to get us back into that flow, that's definitely something to be celebrated. So it is my pleasure to introduce my guest this week, Susan Hensley. Susan, how are you?
I'm great, and thank you for the lovely introduction. I've been looking forward to our conversation, George, so I'm excited to jump in.
Me too. So tell us a little bit about Art for Your Sanity.
Sure. So I wrote the book in many ways because I said I would never write a book. I find that many times when I say I would never do something, I end up being compelled to do it. Ironically, I wrote it because I fell into art journaling completely inadvertently. I had a big corporate job. I didn't define myself as a creative. I was one of those people who got messages around that age of maybe 8 or 9. And most of us get those messages that we're not the artist we think we are, or the writer we think we are. And so I had a series of careers and was successful by the conventional standards of the culture. And I had been working in human resources, doing a lot of coaching. I was an executive for a large multinational company, and something was really gnawing at me, which was play and joy. And if I had hobbies, they became things with goals and purpose. I had a coworker who had discovered a side gift as an artist. She had severely broken her ankle, took up art and found she loved it and was very good. People would commission her and sell, as happens with people who don't define themselves as creative in corporate America with the rules. Some of us are standing by and it's like, I can't draw a stick figure. I can't draw. And she's like, come over to my house one Saturday. I'll teach you guys a few things. So there are maybe about four of us went over to her house and she's trying to explain the color wheel and contrast. And there's some paints there and I just start playing with them. So I love your intro. It shot me back. And for me, it was probably about 5 years old to just playing with art. I was impatient. I didn't let it dry. So I made a brown mess. That's what happens when you don't let them dry. You basically create a soggy piece of brown. Mm-hmm. I loved it. I actually took the soggy little piece of paper home. I hung it on the refrigerator. Now, because of my deep background in coaching and working with clients to look for glimmers of joy, like what lights you up, I started to pay a lot of attention. I was working through anxiety. I was the main breadwinner. I was raising a family. I had a big job, right? All the things we talk about, right? I paid attention. It was like, that was so fun. What if I just play a few minutes each day? So because I was raising a family at the time, we had crayons and some things like that still at home. So I just started to play a little bit. While I was cooking in the kitchen, doing all the things I needed to do to manage my life, I started scribbling, literally with crayons, with inexpensive stuff. And it was so fun, just a few minutes. And I kept going back to it. There wasn't a should. It wasn't on my list. Kept going back. This went on for years. The pandemic hit. I really doubled down. Time of deep misery for many of us. And then I started to realize not only was it giving me tons of joy, but it was really tapping into my inner wisdom, if you will, my authentic voice. And I got really loud messages. It was time for a career switch, even though I planned to work X more years. And you know, you've got the plan. When that voice is calling, and it's calling so creative and joyfully and ingeniously through the images and the collaging. I got like the big glue sticks, the Elmer glue sticks that I just love. I never got fancy tools and just kept playing. And it was through my play versus my journaling practice. I'm a lifelong journaler. I had a first career as a journalist. I used to identify as someone who could write, and then you get bandied around or beaten and you decide you can't write.
I can show you the stack of journals that I have about this big that are all half filled with various things, just thinking like, okay, this journal is going to be for this and this one's going to be for this. And they always fade.
Isn't that funny? Yeah. Meditator and, you know, do a lot of those things so consistently, the playing for the sake of playing, the creating to set that child free was what really moved me. And when you talked about what I do now is to help people in times of big life transitions. And I've really found the more we can play, even for a few minutes, with something you don't have an attachment to, right? So if you identify as a painter, I strongly suggest someone doesn't do paint. Try singing, bang on a drum, do something in nature, because over time, we build up ego and concepts of who we're supposed to be in our creative journey. Yeah. And what the book and what I really try and work with clients about is finding an area where you don't have that attachment, where you don't have that ego, where it is just fun. And it's like being 5, 6, 7, 8, that abandoned you describe in your intro was so perfect. And that's how I ended up writing the book.
And it sounds a lot like something that I heard a while back on a documentary. I'm always a sucker for documentaries that go into filmmaking, TV production, all of that behind the scenes stuff. That is my jam. That is the stuff that I love to sit down and just absorb. One of them that I love is one about South Park called 6 Days to Air. It shows how they go through the creative process of a concept of an episode all the way to completing the episode and delivering it to Comedy Central. One of the moments they show there is Trey Parker's office, and he's got all these different Lego sets, and they're all finished and up on his shelf, and they're all fantastic. he says he gets those as a means of escape because for that period of time, all he has to do is follow the instructions. It provides that release. Would you say that's something similar?
Absolutely. That's a terrific example. I liken what I'm suggesting to people do to how sometimes you get great ideas in the shower. And why is that? Because you don't step into the shower with the intention of I'm going to free my mind and get a great idea, right? I find that kills the search for the great idea because it keeps us in our left brain, the logical, analytical one who decides it's junk before you even fully form the idea. There is no improv happening on the left side of your brain.
So
your example of Trey Parker and the Lego sets, he's not needing to produce a Lego set in 6 days. That is play. It frees all that pressure and then build joy, resilience, all the other things that start coming with the right brain, which they need to use to create South Park, right?
Oh, yeah.
You've got to really quiet that critic to do what they do with that show so relentlessly.
Absolutely.
And I can see the neuroscience of it because producing a show in 6 days, you've got the pressures, the timelines, the costs, the budget, all the stuff you have to deal with. But you need to be living in that right brain space to make it what it is. And the Legos in this example shoot him over there. And what I like, color, tactical, you're touching it. It's somatic. So you really are forcing your other senses over to that right side of your brain.
That's great. Now I want to watch it again just so I can really dig deeper into that. That is terrific. So I'm glad to see that I was thinking along the same lines.
Oh, you absolutely were. And like I said, it's a great example. Now you've made me curious to watch it because as I talk with clients or other interviewers, we all have moments of abandon and joy. And we know what they are because it is a relief and we never feel like we should do them, right? It's that little giddiness of like, I get to.
I even got myself a new Lego set because I started doing that along those lines. So right on my refrigerator in my office, I have the Despicable Me set with Gru with all the minions around him. I have the Star Wars Rebel Brigade break-in from the beginning of the very first movie. I got a star spaceship there. You know, a couple other things. I got a little X-Wing fighter and it's all stuff that I had a lot of fun putting together. I just got a new one this past weekend because I'm working on an audiobook and just thinking that, you know, this will be a lot of fun to do after I'm done with that. That was originally going to be my incentive, my reward for finishing it. Now I just want to do it, get the juices flowing that way. And then I can apply those creative juices to the project I'm working on.
Yeah. And I would even throw out there, because I believe it's true, that applying those creative juices, when you are putting together your Lego set, your rewards, that's already flowing. It's just flowing subconsciously so that when you do turn it over, because you have the intention and you're aware of it, the act of allowing yourself to play with Legos is its reward, its pleasure. It's without, if you didn't build it, there is no Lego judge out there in your life, right? Exactly. And it's so important because of the things you've got going on in your life to find places where you don't have that critic coming in too quickly. To your point, the timelines, the publisher, the expectations, right? You get that judge. It's so insidious that you're not even aware it's there sometimes. And that's what I love about the Legos that you're doing.
What I always love to hear is how people eventually got on what I call that road to creativity in the first place. That's something I have always been fascinated with, how someone experienced something, saw something, read something, met someone, and just like, ooh, that's what I want to do. And then all of a sudden, whatever road they're on in life, they just decide to get on that exit ramp. And all of a sudden, they're somewhere else. What is it that got you into these creative forces in the first place?
So there's probably two stories here. One as the adult, because I really abandoned, I would say, a lot of creativity, or I was applying all of my creativity to working with people, if you will. So I want to be careful because I think we're all creative every day as humans. So I want to say that most of my creativity was probably around getting teams and humans to function well together, because there isn't a step-by-step, and humans are largely unpredictable. And there's, you know, we're the icebergs out there. We're showing the world 10 to 16% of ourselves, and everything else is underneath. So I was most likely getting most of my creative outlet in that 20-year career in HR through work with people. I didn't identify it that way. When I started to play with art, I could remember how much I loved creating little things for people, playing with color, the joy, certain symbols. I mean, symbols that are hearts and flowers, the doodler, right? Yeah. And I talk a lot about, people will say, well, I love doodle. It's like, I will ask people to double down, my clients. It's like, double down on those images, but start to play with gel pens or colors, because you're allowing your mind, you're allowing your brain to move over to that right side, the creative, holistic place, and you're using your body. You're not just on a screen, right? You're feeling the pen or the crayon or whatever in your hand and against the paper. Big believer in the really somatic experience of what is happening in your body.
Yeah.
So came back to that experience about 8 years ago, but certainly recognized as a young child, I actually had initial success. And as I mentioned, my first career was as a journalist. I won a countywide essay contest in sixth grade, got a savings bond. I don't even know if they have savings bonds anymore. Got my picture in the paper, right? The whole deal. And then from then on, the way it happens with kids, people are like, do you want to be a writer? So you start saying yes. And then you get expectations. For about 12 years, I worked in television journalism. That's all my formal education. But what happens is when you have success and start to make a living in it, the confines of culture and how things should be and the kind of success can really kill a lot of the creative impulse. After a while, the joy of it and why you did it disappears. And so I think it's really important for creatives to constantly be looking for new small snippets of joy. That's once again what I like about the Lego thing. You watch the documentary and you tried it, it sounds like.
Yeah.
And it did. It sparked something. It was fun. And, you know, the hope would be as people listen to this, not that they become art journalers, right? Because it's not per se about art journaling. I do talk about why that works so well for the brain. It is about finding the thing, taking a walk and finding, you know, five leaves or a rock, right? You can apply it to being in nature, to a lot of different things, but it's about getting out of anything that you should be quote unquote good at, or the culture is an expectation for you and moving into something that you love.
So what made you decide to put this down in book form?
I realized that I was telling so many people about it. I wasn't stopping people at the grocery store, but I was getting there because it's so simple, low barrier, and it's just a tool, right? I want to be really clear. I think there's a lot out there right now about this will change your life. This won't. It's a tool that may just help you feel a little better and manage some chaos, right? And it's about play and creativity. I recognized that one of the best ways to do it was to put it in a book form, you know, and create on my website. I have like free downloadable PDF because it's such a low barrier, right? I ask people to start with 10 minutes at the most and to do things badly. Part of what happens with so many people I meet is the expectation we're always improving and always doing things well. I actually ask people to do it badly, to create a mess, see what it feels like, to get comfortable in a world where you don't have expectation. And that's a lot of where the book starts.
Nice. Nice. And then as the whole thing was coming together, did you really feel like, ooh, I have something here?
I certainly hoped I did, because I'd done a lot of training and I tried to write the book as a guide. I felt very comfortable and I put my own personal experiences and discoveries. One of the big steps for me that I realized was critical that I really could never envision doing. I joke that art journaling is like your private journal. You're never going to show it to anyone. Right. I recognized, because of all the barriers people have about creating art, and there's really amazing research out there about what happens to us in our Western society, messages about our creativity, I needed to publish my own images from the art journal to show it's not about art. It's not about an end product. It looks like a five-year-old did it. One day I was in a rage and I did a little screaming emoji face with a little watercolor and put red and blue and black slashes. And I wrote like rage and shame. It is like a five-year-old did it, but it was important to see that in processing a difficult emotion very quickly on a page, you close the page, it's safely contained. And you can go back and actually have not only empathy for what you are feeling at the time, but also smile at that person and recognize emotions are fleeting. We're not our emotions. We're not our thoughts. And the journal is such a powerful image of that. Turn the page. Yeah. Next day, you know, you're happy. We're going through a million emotions all day long.
Right, and that's right.
If we can remember we're not that emotion or we're not that thought, we're neither as great or as lousy as we may be telling ourselves. It's really a helpful tool in my longer coaching practice to help people recognize they're resilient. These feelings that they can play with art are safe to express. And afterwards, you can look back with a lot of empathy.
I also want to bring it back a little bit to what you had said before when you said that this book won't change your life. And what I think that this book would do, it won't change your life. It will reawaken something that's already in your life.
Yeah.
Because we don't lose these feelings. We don't lose that joy as much as we just kind of lock it away because there are other things getting in front of it for whatever reason. They're keeping you from getting to those. So basically, this is almost like a detour. You're going around all of those problems and getting to the joy that way. Would you say?
So, oh, George, I love how you said that because it's 100% true. And I hadn't come at it that way. Yes, you are rediscovering. And I talk extensively about it in the book about rediscovering that childlike joy. And to your point, we deaden it. And I realize I can be put off by the marketing machines of everything's going to change your life. I don't want to undersell it, but I want to share with people that it's a tool. But I love what you said. It's a rediscovering things that bring you joy, make you that little bit giddy, that pull you toward it, that feel, should I really just be scribbling on a piece of paper? Should I really be doing Legos? It's like, yes, you should.
And really just like all of those problems that are in front of you, external or internal, they are the wall that is right in front of where you want to go. But those walls are always finite. If you keep going alongside them, you'll find the way around them. And that's something that I've experienced with different challenges at my full-time job. You can either keep trying to bang your head against that wall or find a way around it. Whenever I'm a little bit more calm with myself, and just kind of feeling that little touch of joy for whatever reason, then I'm able to find a way around it.
Yeah, the analogy I think of, it's how like a well-timed joke or quip or bit of laughter in a tense situation just diffuses everything, right? And what that does to lighten us up, because as we get more and more constricted, right, we're trapping ourselves. And yes, it's a way around. You can look around, see the whole corner. You can walk around. You don't have to scale it in that same way. And you can even see there are different paths. I don't even have to continue on this path, which is what happened to me in looking back at my art journal. It just became clear. I was really ready for something else, no matter what my plans were. And I was going to honor that, right? I was at the stage of my life to honor what I was discovering.
That's great. And then so once you had everything all finished, you had this finished book, you had it ready to go, what were the next steps that you decided to do with it?
It's interesting. And I'm sure almost everyone listening is right before it came out, I did this all and didn't tell anyone I was doing it. Then before it came out in the world of marketing and putting it out there, it brought back all the demons that we learn at some point as children. It was immobilized for a short period. I was talking to marketing and the people who published my book or helped me publish it. And I was just really resistant at that point to wanting to tell anyone. I had to go back to the why, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Writing it because it's a helpful tool. I tell people when I work with them, I tell friends, I joked about telling people at the grocery store. It was something I believed could be helpful. I had to go back down to the why and get out of my own head that you think everyone's watching you all the time, which they aren't.
Yeah.
But we tell ourselves those really vicious stories about critics and criticism and how criticism feels. The initial book reviews that went out, put it out on like NetGalley, so before it was actually published, like get some feedback, right. I had two things I was terrified of in my mind. And in the initial reviews, which were all surprisingly positive, two reviewers hit the issues, but they turned them into positives. I'll share the two issues. I wrote a short book with pictures. You can read it in like 3 hours, 2 hours. One reviewer wrote, I loved it because I read it before bed and I can art journal the next day.
Great.
Took the fact that I all of a sudden was feeling fear and shame that I wrote a short book and recognized it was a positive. A lot of that came out of my training as a journalist in TV where everything is tight, tight, tight. And so I really struggled to write more than needs to be said. So that was one criticism. The other was, I'm not an artist. I don't have a background in art. I identify as a non-creative, great project manager, good leader, right? And sure enough, a review said, and the reviewer phrased it in a kind way. I'm probably going to be less kind, but it was basically for the people out there who've never discovered art, this is a great entry point, right? So you could tell that the reviewer read it initially because I think they were intrigued by the title and were hoping it had been more robust, but they recognized that it isn't for someone who went to an art school at all. It really is for what I've described, someone who needs a glimmer of joy and created a brown, soggy piece of paper one day, age 50, and thought, oh.
But that's your brown mess right there.
Yes, so. My brown mess. That's exactly what I mean. And so I wrote it for the people like me, quite honestly. That was my circle.
Yeah.
And so when you ask what the process was like, I was so frozen. And that whole process of getting the early reviews before publishing to get a sense, and the fact that two of the reviewers hit my great fears about the book, but didn't see it as a reason to not read it, really helped me get over myself.
And then after everything is finished, there you are with that finished book in your hands.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I love to hear about is, how did you celebrate?
Oh, how did I celebrate? It took me a while because when it came, I think I was still a little bit afraid. And then I let myself start to feel it. When I had my first child, you're very afraid of going into labor, right? Because you hear all the stories. This will resonate with people who've been told horrible stories about what it's like before you have your first child. Everyone's got a horrible delivery story and they terrorize you with it. And it isn't real and they think they're being helpful, but you're really, really scared.
Yeah.
And then you have the experience you have, which isn't necessarily their experience. But then whatever, the oxytocin, some hormone kicks in, which is why people continue to have children. Yep. And there is that sense of joy and peace. I can only describe it. And it sounds so funny for a short book that's a how-to and a helpful tool to liken it to that giving birth, the fear that like once you actually put your whole heart and soul in there and you recognize it's like putting a piece of you out there because of what I wrote and how I wrote. For a while, I was trying to get my publisher to not use my name. I was considering using a different name, right? Yeah. I really had a lot to work through, which is so ironic as a coach who works with this with other people, but it gives me a lot of empathy for it. And I worked through it. I used birth analogy and the pain. How I celebrated was really just an internal sense of once it's out, it's out. And getting really pure as far as my intention was never to be a bestseller per se, or to be any of these things. I had to really let go of it. The intention was, will it help someone?
Yeah.
And as that feedback came in, as I started doing the surrounding publicity, as I started doing additional workshops, I got more secure in that it does help some people. And it's great in that sense.
I can definitely say it's going to help a lot of people here as people that are trying to rediscover those elements. One thing that I would definitely say would benefit my listeners is for them to go to your website, because there are a lot of other tools. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Sure. I really start with just the free downloadable PDF. Once again, it goes with the intention of the book. It helps me in my coaching practice. If I want to get people started, I have that. There's also videos, online training, things like that, how to contact me. But book is easy. It's available everywhere folks buy books.
Excellent. And you can also get a bundle if you get it directly from your site.
I may have recently switched up the bundle on the Get Started video and the book. So I'm not sure that is still operating. If it is, then yes, the videos really try and walk people through how to get started and release that barrier to creativity and judgment that creeps in.
Judgment definitely has a way of creeping in. And I know that there are a lot of people dealing with those same inner blockages that I deal with on a daily basis. What would you say is the first piece of advice to get through that, to get that joy back up again?
Sure. As we've talked about art, scribbling with crayons, collaging with anything, if any of that appealed to you, I would say start there.
Yeah.
Borrow some children's things, go spend just a few dollars, very low barrier, set a timer, put on your favorite song. I actually have people in my workshops find a favorite song. Most of it's like 3 to 5 minutes. Put it on and just fill a piece of paper. Just scribble, do whatever you want to do, draw it however you want. So I recommend that people start with the smallest possible step, because if you make it too complicated, you won't do it. If people have two colors pens laying around their house, it can be blue and black, find a back of a piece of junk mail envelope and put on a song 3 minutes and just scribble or doodle. If, as I was talking about doodling, images came up in your mind or shapes, do that for just a few minutes and notice how you feel. It was 3 minutes you didn't scroll, 3 minutes you didn't think of something you should do. I really ask people to think about that. I like to have folks start with the smallest possible thing. Maybe it's dancing around a room. Maybe you have thoughts about your artistic ability. Put on the song, shut the doors, do it alone, dance around the room. Sing at the top of your lungs. Do something for a very short period that you have no expectation you are good at. I think that's what's freeing. Whatever you say, I can't sing a tune. Fine. Bellow to the top of your lungs. I can't dance at all. Close the door and put on some song that you've always wanted to wildly dance to. One person told me they wanted a Guns N' Roses song, and for 5 minutes they jumped up and down and screamed in the room. It was very freeing, and it felt like a whole new person. That's what I'm looking for people to try. It's a very small step that gets you to some play and abandon, because there the creativity starts to come.
And then that's where the juices start flowing, and then you can just all of a sudden, it's where the ideas really come in.
Exactly.
I've noticed that whenever I'm jotting down notes or scribbling, that's when it just becomes like, oh, this needs to go over here. And then this can go over here. And that really does flow. So, I mean, that is a testament to what you're saying right there. And we discussed what is available on your website, but what is your website?
Oh, I keep it simple. It's just susan-hensley.com.
And it's H-E-N-S-L-E-Y.
Yes.
And where can my listeners find you on social media?
It's a Susan Hensley Art Journaling, and then LinkedIn on Instagram. So Instagram and LinkedIn.
Excellent. I can't think of a better guest to have here, considering all the stuff that is going on in my own life, in all of our lives, than to have someone like Susan Hensley here to help us get through those barriers, whether they're external barriers, whether they're internal barriers. A lot of cases, they're internal. But if we can get through that, and I'm saying we, all of us, we can do this together, we can push ourselves through this, then we can get back to the joy we felt when we first decided to become creative, whether it's an author, filmmaker, whether it is a dancer, whether it is a painter, whether it's a comedian, like something to get that creative expression. Every now and then that light never goes out. Well, those, you know, a lot of cases it does completely go out, but in a lot of cases it's lowered. It's dim, and we got to feed that every now and then. And things like what Susan was talking about will do that. So please get your copy of Art for Your Sanity. I hope that all of you apply what is in there and get through those barriers and find that joy in creating again. Because as I've said before, in these wild times, we need your creativity, we need your vision, we need your stories now more than ever. So for Susan Hensley, this is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward, and I will see you next week.